are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. And we're just moving away from our great show, Homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show, with Yael Caduce, who's still in here. I'm kind of having a hard time toning down this song because it's a beautiful song. So, this is Kauai Soapbox, and we are going to have a really strong show today. We have two really important topics. Today is what they call the penultimate primary. It is in New Jersey, South Dakota, North Dakota, New Mexico, Montana, California, and so that is six states that are having primaries. So we will have some primary analysis that we do on the presidential part. And unlike mainstream media, even NPR, community radio, is not manipulating the results. So in the first half hour of our show, we'll be and the last half hour, we'll be discussing this important primary. And then from 4:30 to 5:30, we have another really great conversation, and I'm super stoked to have Isaac Harp, also known as Paka, Ke Aloha Piscata, and then Presley Wan, Hoku Kotahi, and Dr. Richman are going to be in the studio. So we will be talking about the expansion of Papahanao Mokuakea, which is the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and so that's what that's going to be about. So right now, I'd like to say that Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store. And the Kauai Store is a great, great place that sells products that are made by people from here.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and support you did. In our last fund drive, we came up with $62,105. Made a really big difference. It helps to keep us on the air. So, Marshall, we were looking at the primaries, and the New Jersey primary is already underway, and that the polls closed around, maybe about an hour or two ago? I think it closed around 2 p.m. today.
New Jersey polls closed at 2 o'clock, yes.
Yes, and so how much of the vote has been taken now?
We have 74% of the vote reporting. They called it quite a while ago. Hillary Clinton has won New Jersey at this point about 63% to 36%.
So that's very substantial. So I'm seeing, 74. So that is a big win. That was expected to be in New Jersey to go to Clinton, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that has been being called. I know this weekend they already had totally called the whole election for Hillary. But I want to play a few things that I think are important. I'm going to play something that Bernie Sanders has said about this, and I will be honest with my bias. I like 85% of this island, and you know, the majority, I should say, of my precinct, but every precinct on this island, every precinct in the neighbor islands voted for Bernie Sanders. Only three precincts in Oahu gave Hillary Clinton a lead. So he was prepared for this. We've all been prepared for this. And to have the media that has a very, very clear bias, including public radio, this is community radio, had done this. So I'm going to play a little bit of what Senator Sanders has to say about that himself, and I'm going to cut to listening to the communications director from the Department of, the Democratic National Committee, and then we're going to go back to Senator Sanders. So here we go.
In terms of delegate math, I think there is some confusion in the media. Right now, in terms of delegate math, as you all know, it requires 2,383 votes, delegate votes, to clinch the Democratic nomination. As of today, Secretary Clinton has 1,769 pledged delegates, and I have 1,501 pledged delegates. It is extremely unlikely that Secretary Clinton will have the requisite number of pledged delegates to claim victory on Tuesday night. Now, I have heard reports that Secretary Clinton has said it's all going to be over on Tuesday night. I have heard reports that the media, after the New Jersey results come in, are going to declare that it is all over. That simply is not accurate. There are 931 pledged delegates at stake in contests between today and June 14. For Secretary Clinton to get to the magic number of 2,383, she would have to win two-thirds of those pledged delegates. Frankly, unless I am very, very mistaken, that is absolutely not going to happen. In other words, at the end of the nominating process, no candidate will have enough pledged delegates to call the campaign a victory. They will be dependent upon super delegates. In other words, the Democratic National Convention will be a contested convention. It is true, obviously, that Secretary Clinton has received the overwhelming support from superdelegates. There is no debate about that. She leads me in the number of superdelegates by an overwhelming, approximately 10-to-1 margin. But here is the point. For the media to be lumping together on Tuesday night the pledged delegates and the superdelegates is just not accurate. Pledged delegates are pledged to vote for their candidates. Superdelegates make their final decision at the convention on July 25th, 6 long weeks from today. Superdelegates can and have changed their candidate choice in the past. This is not Bernie Sanders stating an opinion. This is from Luis Miranda.
And so now I'm going to actually play Luis Miranda, who is the Democratic National Committee speaker. Oops, hold on. Ah. Okay, community radio.
It's nominee. I'm talking about superdelegates. Let's talk about
this. This is from CNN.
Joining me now, Luis Miranda. He's the communications director for the Democratic National Committee and a former advisor to President Obama. So you've heard these complaints about superdelegates. I know that they've been there since the
84.
And one of the complaints from Sanders supporters is that superdelegates subvert the will of actual voters, that the establishment candidate effectively starts a race with 20% of the delegates in his or her pocket. How do you respond?
The reality is that 85% of the delegates at the convention are selected by the results of primaries and caucuses, so the voters themselves are the single biggest factor in who becomes the nominee. Superdelegates, I think one of the problems is the way the media reports it. Any night that you have a primary or caucus, the media lumps in superdelegates that they've basically polled because they just call them up and say, who are you supporting? they don't actually vote until the convention. And so they shouldn't be included in any count on primary or caucus night, because the only thing you're picking on primary and caucus nights are the pledged delegates based on the vote.
But what about when we do our totals, you think it's okay to include?
Not yet, because they're not actually voting, and they're likely to change their minds. You look at 2008, and what happened then was there was all this assumption about what superdelegates were going to do, and many of them did change their mind before the convention, and it shifted the results in the end. But to be clear, the superdelegates have never actually determined who the nominee is since 1984 when they were created, and after 2008, they were actually reduced from 20% to just 15%. And so I think we're in a situation where the voters continue to be the single most important factor. And the purpose of the superdelegates is to make sure that our elected officials and party leaders, who are the backbone of the party, get to participate at the convention. But it's also good to have them in a separate category because regular folks can run to be delegates at the convention. So you'll see in 2008 we had a 17-year-old who got elected as a pledged delegate who would have never had that chance if he was running against his member of Congress. So it's a way that we do it to make sure that we also have diversity at our convention, because we want the convention floor to look like the rest of the country.
Very interesting. The DNC.
So what we just heard there was the Democratic National Committee person saying, hey, it's not accurate to be calling out the superdelegate count ahead of time, which is what they are fully doing on the mainstream media. So we're going to go back to Bernie and hear what he has to follow up on this point. So Then we're going to move on a little bit. We will hear how the New Jersey election's going for a moment, and then we're going to talk to our guests here in the studio. So back to Bernie. Oops. Sorry.
He says, and he is exactly right. So for the media or anybody else, or Secretary Clinton to say on Tuesday night, let's add together all of the superdelegates that I have plus the pledged delegates I have, and we're over the top, is inaccurate. Now, I am not naive. I am pretty good in arithmetic. I understand that the battle for the Democratic nomination that I am waging is a very, very steep climb. No one has heard me say differently. But given the fact that when I began this campaign a year ago, when I was 60 points behind Secretary Clinton, when I was 50 points down here in the first poll done in California, and where just the other day there was a poll that had us 1 point ahead, we have come a very long way. And steep climbs and challenges are not something that this campaign shies away from. As all of you know, I am not a great fan of the current nominating process. It is a deeply flawed process. And whether I win this nomination or whether I do not win this nomination, I will do everything that I can to change it. The idea that more than 400 superdelegates came on board Secretary Clinton's campaign before any other candidate had declared their willingness to run for office is totally absurd. That is called an anointment process, not a democratic process with a small or large D. Imagine that, the establishment coming on board and saying, this is our candidate, doesn't matter who is running against her, doesn't matter how the campaign unfolds, that is our candidate. The idea that these superdelegates were on board Secretary Clinton's campaign 10 months before the first vote was counted in Iowa is totally nonsensical. And that is a process which must be changed, and I will do my best to change it. Clearly, as everybody knows, the political world has changed since April 2015, when Secretary Clinton received the support of 400 superdelegates. Now, as we go forward, let me be very clear that I do understand that we have an uphill road to travel. But I do also want to make it clear what I will be telling to these superdelegates, because they are now in their position, whether I like it or not. Those are the rules, rules I intend to change, but they are the rules right now. And the case that we make to the superdelegates is fairly obvious, and that is the election of Donald Trump as President of the United States would, in my view, be a disaster for this country. His bigotry against Mexicans and Latinos, against Muslims, against African Americans, against women, against veterans, is not something that can be tolerated in the United States in the year 2016. Further, his economic agenda will result in the rich becoming much richer while everybody else continues to become poorer. And clearly his foreign policies are extremely reckless. Donald Trump must not be elected president. Therefore, the Democrats need the strongest possible candidate to defeat Donald Trump. And I believe, and the case that I will make to the superdelegates, is that based on all of the objective evidence that I have seen, the Sanders campaign is the campaign to defeat Donald Trump. In national poll after national poll, and in statewide poll after statewide poll, we defeat Trump by much greater numbers than Secretary Clinton. Polls in California, in Michigan, in New Hampshire, in New Jersey, just within the last few days or few weeks, and other states show that we defeat Donald Trump by much greater numbers than does Secretary Clinton. In fact, as you may know, there are states where Secretary Clinton actually loses to Trump while we defeat Trump, North Carolina, among many others. The latest NBC national poll had Bernie Sanders beating Trump by 15 points, Clinton beating him by 3 points. There have been some national polls in which Trump actually came on top of Secretary Clinton. But polling is not the only reason why I believe that I am the strongest candidate. What our campaign has done is to bring millions of people into the political process who previously were not engaged. And that is working class people, and that is young people by the millions. Voter registration right here in California, Secretary of State just came out with some numbers yesterday in which voter registration has surged here in California, and it is equally true in many other states around this country. And here in California, that surge is tied to young people registering to vote as well as Latinos. This is extremely important. But equally important from the perspective of any delegate going to the Democratic National Convention is the simple fact that our campaign has the energy, it has the enthusiasm, and it has the grassroots activism that a national general campaign, general election campaign, needs to bring out a large voter turnout. Here is a political truism. Republicans win, as they did in 2014, when people are demoralized, when they give up on the political process. When voter turnout is low, Republicans do well. When people are energized, when they are prepared to stand up and fight for change, Democrats do well. I think all of the objective evidence suggests that our campaign has the energy, has the enthusiasm. which will translate into a large voter turnout in the general election in November. And that means not only do Democrats retain the White House, we regain the U.S. Senate, we do better in the House, we win governor's races all over this country. I am running for president because I want to give the American people a real choice in this election, a choice not just to vote against somebody, but to vote for a vision for where our great country can become. It is very clear that Donald Trump's negative ratings are enormously high, unprecedented for a major party presidential candidate, and Secretary Clinton's negative ratings are also very, very high. I think it is important to give the American people a choice about a new direction, a future that calls for a government that represents all of us, not just the 1%, a future which says that we will not continue to have a corrupt campaign finance system which allows billionaires to buy elections, a future in which we have a minimum wage that is a living wage, which is $15 an hour, a future which says we're going to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure and create 13 million decent paying jobs, a future which says that we will pass comprehensive immigration reform and a path towards citizenship, a future which says that we will join the rest of the industrialized world and guarantee health care to all people as a right, not a privilege, a future which says that, yes, we are going to leave this planet in a way that is healthy and habitable, which means that we will take on the fossil fuel industry and we will transform our energy system away from fossil fuel. And by the way, we will also end fracking so that people in California and in America can have clean drinking water. So that is why I am running for president. We look forward on Tuesday to do extremely well. And I would just add that for all of those people who said, well, you know, Bernie, you should drop out, think about what they are saying to the people of California and the other states that have yet to vote. Now, maybe I am old-fashioned, but I do believe that the people of California, the largest state in this country, should have a right to cast their ballot to see which candidate they want to become president of the United States.
And that is Senator Bernie Sanders speaking about the math and how the race is not over, regardless of what the mainstream media might be saying. I would say New Jersey definitely looks like went to Secretary Hillary Clinton.
Yes, as has New Mexico, South Dakota. Well, at least she has commanding leads there with a good percentage reporting. Montana has just begun to report, but she's leading there as well. In North Dakota, Bernie Sanders...
She's leading with 0% reporting, so she's got 9 votes or something. Yeah.
No, there's about 20,000 people have voted.
Okay.
So, no, yeah, it's early, but she's leading. And Bernie Sanders has won North Dakota. Not a surprise there. It's a caucus.
Yes, and he won that at 64%. And then so you said New Mexico is reporting?
Yes, 47% reporting. And Hillary Clinton has 53% of the vote.
And then South Dakota, 71%. And it's Hillary at 52%. All right, so California is really going to matter a lot. New Jersey, 81% reporting. And she has a sizable lead, 63.7. So we're seeing all of that, and we will come back to this in about an hour right now. I'm really excited to have some people in the studio with me. Presley, you got to pull your mic up close to your face. So sometimes the federal government does good things, sometimes it does bad things, sometimes we see things going on at the federal level that make us nervous. I'll be honest, this election makes me nervous. Have you all been focused on it much?
Yes, absolutely.
People are nodding, can't nod on the radio, people can't see it. So let me introduce my guests. I have Hoku Cody.
Aloha.
Aloha, you want to tell us anything about you just a little bit?
My name is Hoku Cody. I am originally from the Big Island, but I now live on the North Shore of Kauai, and I'm a member of the Cultural Working Group.
And you got some family here in Kilauea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, and then Presley Wan, you've been in here a lot, and I have to drop a name of your famous sister, Sandy Swift. Everybody loves Sandy. I love Sandy Swift. She's amazing. I love her language lessons. But Presley, just tell them a little tiny bit about yourself.
Yes, my name is Presley Wan. My family is from Kauai, from Haena and Kapa'a. And yeah, I've been very active with Hui Makaina na o Makana in Haena.
That's the group at the end of the road in Haena that has been doing the amazing job at restoring the Lo'ikalo and doing rock work out there and turned it into a very, I mean, it's always beautiful, but it's cultivated looking and beautiful. It's reminiscent of, you've reclaimed what had been there,
yes.
Some of it.
Yes.
Some of it. And so when we're talking about Papahanao Moku'akea, that is the Marine Monument, Marine Preserve on the Northwest Hawaiian Islands. And Dr. Bob Richmond, I actually have never met you before. Can you tell us about you?
Oh, sure. I'm the director of the Kiwala Marine Laboratory. That belongs to the University of Hawaii at Manoa. I've been working in Hawaii since 1979, and my expertise is marine conservation biology, especially coral reefs.
So we can call you a scientist.
I'm the pet scientist of the group.
Okay, you're the pet
That's
scientist.
That's my official title.
You're the pet scientist. And you do, are you one of the people who does the studies up there? Do you go out on the big boats up there?
Actually, I was up at Midway quite a few years ago, but a lot of my work is based here in the main Hawaiian Islands and throughout Micronesia. I work a lot on the analysis of the data, so more of the Western science, but interact quite a bit with the biocultural individuals that are here and that are very interested in moving forward on this bold initiative.
Okay, I like this. The bicultural individuals who just introduced themselves have both spent some time out there, and Presley Wan has a grandfather who's had, or great-grandfather.
My great-grandfather, his name was Alexander Hailama, and there was an account of him and his brother, Kanaloa, when they were both very young age, that actually he'd claimed, told my mother, that our family came from Nihua. He had family that lived there. And then as two young men, they actually sailed from Haena to Nihua and back. And his canoe actually, his fishing / sailing canoe was actually on the beach until right in front of our kuleana, Kamealoa, we call it, or that's Limahuli.
Okay.
Was actually at the stream where it comes out. That's called Koya, that area. Mm. Yeah, his sailing canoe was actually, sailing fishing canoe was actually on the beach until 1946 when the tidal wave took it away.
Well, thank you. And we have two very special guests on the radio also. Actually, three. Three special guests, Isaac and Tammy Hart, and people call you Paka? Harp. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Is this, are you Paka?
Yes, this is Paka with a P, not an F.
okay, yep. Uh-huh.
My wife Tammy is listening by as well.
And how about Ke Aloha? Is she there?
Yes, I'm here. Aloha.
Aloha. And I think of you as being kind of a champion up at Mauna Kea. Is that correct? You've been a preserver and a protector of the mountain?
Well, yes, all of us have, actually. And I am, but I'm also a member, and I'm honored to be a member of the Cultural Working Group as well.
For Papahanao Moku'akea, yes. So I'm just connecting the dots for people who might not know that, because we've put a lot of focus on this station. Part of KKCR's mission is to protect and preserve and cultivate the Hawaiian community and to be fostering their voices. And so sometimes it's a little bit of a challenge because not everybody's totally on the same page. But we have had really strong presentation on what's happened up at Mauna Kea. So this is KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and we have six people with strong mana'o speaking to Kauai right now. And I'm going to kind of turn it over to you guys, and who's the leader here? People are pointing at Presley. Is that who's getting pointed at? Hoku. Hoku. Okay, Hoku, you guide this conversation. Because so also for the listener who's out there, I can tell that I have a number of fishermen listeners. So thank you so much for listening in, because it helps to break down where there is divisions or differences of understanding. So I'm going to be hearing the mana'o of six people in 1 hour. So we're going to hold calls for a while, and I want to be able to let each person sort of share what they want to share, and then you know, we look and see about calls. Okay, so Hoku, you're going to guide this. Mm-hmm. You're being my host.
Well, mahalo for having us. We are definitely honored and privileged to be here. I think what I'll do is I'll just start off with a little bit of a timeline of when the letter, from the initial letter that had gotten sent out on January 29th.
So tell us what that letter is.
So the letter was written by seven significant members of the Hawaiian community asking President Obama to take action in expanding the protection of Papahānau Mokuakea Marine National Monument. On March 25th, the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands Native Hawaiian Cultural Working Group, which we shortened to Cultural Working Group, or CWG, we met to discuss and vote on options for expansion of the monument. And without objections, the CWG membership enthusiastically approved a proposal to expand Papahānau Mokuakea out to the full 200 nautical mile limit of the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands Exclusive Economic Zone, also called the EEZ, with exceptions to the waters surrounding the islands of Ni'ihau and Kauai, which should remain outside of the monument boundaries. Finally, we also proposed that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs be elevated to a co-trustee of the Papahānau Mokuakea Marine National Monument, and with the belief that our people should have full participation in management decisions for the marine environment that is intrinsic to the culture, especially Papahānau Mokuakea, where we believe life began. And then just to give a little background of the Cultural Working Group, it's been in existence since 2000. It originally was under Reserve Advisory Council that was also managing the same area, and now it is under the Monument Management Board for Papahānau Mokuakea Marine National Monument. We are made up of 50 individuals located across all of the main Hawaiian islands, and each with a strong tie to Papahānau Mokuakea. Our members include Hawaiian kupuna, researchers, educators, community organizers, advocates, as well as practitioners. And from here, I think we will ask Isaac if he wants to give a little bit more background of where this proposal came from in the larger momentum of...
And for clarity, he's one of the signatures on the... Why don't you say who signed it?
So the seven significant members of the Hawaiian community, William Ayla Jr., Kamana'o Crab, Isaac Pakaharp, Kekueva Kikiloi, Kaleo Manuel, Victoria Holt Takamine, and Nainoa Thompson.
So that's the Hokulea that's in New York right now, really big events. We might talk about that a little bit on Thursday. And OHA and OHA. And so anyway, okay, yeah. So Paka, please share.
Hello, Felicia. Mahalo for allowing us to participate in your radio show. I just want to say a quick aloha to Auntie Nani, aloha Auntie, my brother Ben Nihi, who lives over there, as well as my uncle Val Ato, and a lot of fishermen that have participated in with on Gillnet Task Force, as well as Bottle Fish Task Force. But I want to kind of give a brief history of why I drafted the plan for the coral reef reserve that was created in 2000. But, you know, one of the big things out there right now is about the military activity. And the fact is, they're already there. They've been exempt in all the past things. But by having this larger area designated as a protected area, I believe it will give us a better footing to argue against military activity in the area. The fact that they're already there. And if you're opposing the proposed expansion, basically supporting the status quo, which I hope people can understand. But the reason I drafted the plan for the Holy People System Reserve that was created in 2000 was because FESPAC, the Federal Fishery Management Advisory Council, supported the rape of the last sturgeon in the North Hawaiian Island, crashing the fishery twice. And why would that be, you might ask? But the simple answer is that several FESPAC council members held lobster fishing permits, and the National Marine Fisheries Service rubber-stamped FESPAC recommendations. FESPAC is only an advisory council, and the National Marine Fisheries Service actually sets the rules. This is a case that's where it's worse than the fox guarding the hen house, because the farmer, in this case, the National Marine Fisheries Service, was helping the fox FESPAC in getting what they wanted. So instead of the National Marine Fisheries Service stopping the lobster fishing to allow the fox to recover, FESPAC recommended what they called a retain all fishery management plan that was adopted by the National Fishery Service. That plan reduced the lobster trap mesh to 1 inch by 2 inches and allowed the take of every lobster that entered the traps, including juvenile lobster with tails as small as a man's thumb, and worse yet, a pyrenee. This was not allowed anywhere else in the world that I know of. So the Colby People System plan provided a halt to the lobster fishing, and it provided a continuation of the bottlefish fishery. So I fought hard against some of the environmental organizations that got involved with that to get the bottlefishing, allow the bottlefishing to continue, which it did. And it also allows for the continuation of subsistence, religious, and other cultural practices by Hawaiians, which also continues under the present monument and will continue under the expanded monument proposal. So to promote himself as a president concerned with environment, G.W. Bush established the Opahana Moku Akea Monument in 2006, which overlays the reserve boundary that was created in 2000. That action led to a bio program for the bottle fishers, and as I mentioned, they were allowed to continue fishing under the reserve. I felt kind of bad about that, but there's not really much anything I personally could do. And although there was no lobster fishery for over 6 years at that time, FESPAC was successful in lobbying a bio program for the former lobster fishery, and some of the FESPAC members would stand to make money out of the program. But the proposed monument boundary does not extend any closer to Kauai, so a portion of Middle Bank now open to fishing will remain open. In addition, due to the concerns expressed by supposed local fishermen, the weather buoy located north of Niho and Necker will remain open for fishing. It should be known that it takes a pretty large boat to get out there and haul back enough fish to make a profit. And if the longliners fight for access to the area, I hope their supposed local fishermen step up to the plate and help us keep them out if we can get them excluded from the proposed expanded area. I'd like to read some information from a 2014 National Marine Fisheries Service Longline Log Report. As far as the numbers of hooks set in Hawaii waters and where. So in all areas combined, there was a reported 47,130,000 hooks set. In the main Hawaiian Island GED, there was a reported 8,461,000 hooks set. And then the Northwest Hawaiian Island PEZ, there was reported 2,477,000 hooks set. So excluding the longliners for the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands, we'll leave a puka or a corridor for Ahi to reach small boat local fisheries in our main islands. And that's one of the main things I hope the fishermen can understand. This will benefit the fishermen. And if you do the math, a total of 10,938,000 hooks were in the entire EEZ of Hawaii, while 36 million, or over 70.5% of the hooks were set outside of Hawaii's EEZ, that kind of gives me the picture that perhaps they don't even need to be fishing in our EEZ at all. And I think if we could exclude the longliners from our entire EEZ, that would bring the greatest benefit to the many, which is our small boat fishermen. And finally, like I said, if you oppose the proposed expansion, perhaps without being aware of it, you are supporting the status quo, which would allow deep sea ocean mining to occur, deep sea precious coal harvesting to occur, increased military activity, increased long-line species, etc. All I ask is for the people to see the research, the truth, so that you can make an informed decision on the proposed expansion. Mahalo.
Mahalo. And so people that do are internet people. I know a number of the fishermen listening aren't internet people. So the internet people, there's a website, www.expandpmnm, like Pohakuloa. Excuse me. Sorry. Oh, my gosh. I'm on the wrong island right there. Papahanao Mokuakea National Marine.
Marine National Monument.
Marine National. PMNM. I'm not good with acronyms at all. .com. ExpandPMNM.com. And there's a Facebook page on the same name. And I want to acknowledge our West Side fishermen and our Anahola fishermen who are listening in now. And people can text me questions, or we will probably, our line is filled right now to be taking actually phone calls. Actually, we might be able, because these guys are all on one line, is that right? They're all on one line? Okay, so in a little bit we can take phone calls, but I'm not quite ready to do that yet. Does Ke Aloha or Dr. Bob or Presley have something you want to share?
No, if Ke Aloha wants to speak on the cultural side of the significance of this proposal.
I will just say a little bit. I know that there are concerns. I've received, you know, concerns about military and concerns about other things. I think the main thing that I wanted to contribute is that, you know, Mauna Kea, you mentioned Mauna Kea earlier, Mauna Kea, and this area out here, Papahanao Mokuakea, and all that deep ocean, you know, from a cultural standpoint, there are two poles, yeah? Pole meaning P-O, yeah?
Yes.
The highest realm, the highest, darkest part of the sky, and the deepest, darkest part of the ocean. You know, there's a lot of people who have the perception that the deep ocean is just empty. Well, it's not. These are culturally and spiritually areas where birth of all things begin. And what I want to say to people is that I know that I have the same fears that many Native Hawaiians have about the federal government and our interactions with them. But I really want to just appeal to this part of the question, and that is that we need to be more afraid as Hawaiians, or not afraid, but to be more respectful of those things that are our sacred realms and that belong to our akua and our amakua, because that is what we're talking about out there. Those rare species, even ones that we haven't even learned about or discovered, belong to the akua. And so that's why it's important that we stand for those things. The same way we stand for Mauna Kea, we got to stand for Papa. Papa is the ocean equivalent of the Mauna. And so that's my bigger appeal. And, you know, the question is, we support fishing. I support fishing unequivocally. Absolutely. That's our culture. But we need to make a separation between those longliners are one thing and our small boat fishermen are another. And we want a malama pono fishing. But longliners, I'm sorry, and I just have to speak to this, in no way, shape, and form can be construed as pono fishing. And so that's why I'm standing here, and I want to stand for Papahanao Mokuakea and the expansion. And I thank you for your time. And I want to say aloha to Auntie Nani. We love you, Auntie. Mahalo for having us. And that's all. Thank you.
Yes, and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. We have six pretty sharp people in here who have a lot of mana'o on why there are reasons for expanding Papahanao Mokuakea, the marine monument, which is like a marine preserve. When you guys are done, I can ask a few questions that I think are pretty typical of the voices of concern. We've had 2.5 shows of people expressing what they're concerned about. But I don't know if anybody's ready yet. Or Dr. Bob, do you want to say some stuff?
Oh, certainly. First, let me preface my statement by pointing out that I actually got my start in marine biology working with fishers in the Caribbean, and that's where I learned a lot of my best marine biology. After having a bachelor's degree, it was working with fishing communities and watching them lose their fishing, lose their fisheries, and be concerned about the future that caused me to go back for graduate school. And I've been working with fishing communities in the Pacific for the last 37 years. And so I come at it not just a quote-unquote Western scientist in the laboratory, but as somebody who really cherishes the opportunity to bring what Western science can offer along with traditional ecological knowledge. What's particularly rewarding about this opportunity to engage, and I consider it a true privilege, is the fact that this is one of those times when the traditional ecological knowledge and cultural knowledge are in complete harmony with the most modern science. There's quite a few top-notch marine biologists that are involved in it as well, and there's a true consensus. The science is solid. There's no question about it that this is a very proactive move, and that the science shows why. A number of reasons that marine protected areas are kind of like a bank account for the future. And if you take a look at a good bank account, you know, you're looking at your deposits, your principal, and your interest rate of what's coming out. And by establishing a large area like Papanaumokuakea, you're not only creating a very large bank account with a large amount of principal, but the modern science shows us that for some fish, if you double the size of a female, what we call the BFFs, for all those that have teenagers out there who text, we're not talking about best friends forever. We're talking about big, fat females. You double the size of a female fish, and you can increase her output by 2,000-fold. So think about it as a bank account. If you put $100 in your account at 1% interest, if you were willing to put in $200, you could get 2,000% interest. You know, what individual wouldn't do that, not only for today, but most importantly for their children and for future generations? In a world of climate change, it's really the driver of so many things that cause concern for us. We're seeing changes in oceanic patterns. We're seeing changes in where fish are. Part of the problem with climate change is the expansion of what's called the Western Pacific warming pool that's pushing the pelagic fish from the Western Pacific north into the east. And for that reason, if you were to choose one location, which would be the ideal marine protected area for the future, Papanaumokuakea is that location. Not just for fish, but for larvae. And in looking at the northernmost reefs that we have, not only in the United States, but some of the northernmost coral reefs in the world, are within the northwestern Hawaiian Islands and within this area as well. A lot of people are probably well aware, especially people that spend time in the water, that these last 3 years have been devastating for coral reefs in terms of bleaching.
We have disintegrating reef on the North Shore here.
Absolutely.
It's not really, there's a number of different people who have different ideas of why that's happening, but it's a very profound problem.
It is, and we know one of the major drivers for the last 3 years has been elevated seawater temperatures. We've been seeing 90-degree water in Kaneohe Bay on Oahu. We've been seeing the same off of Olawalu on Maui. So when you look at the future of reefs and resilience, establishing protection not only for the coral reefs within the first 50 miles, but extending that protection outward. One way of looking at marine protected areas is kind of like home bases in a game of tag. You can establish a number of home bases, but every fishery in the world knows all you have to do is wait for the fish to move from one place to another, and that's where you can pick them off. So in this case, we're looking at increasing the corridors of connectivity that allow fish to be able to move back and forth. In some of the studies that have been cited by individuals saying that most of the fish stay very close, they're kind of misrepresenting the data. That's only the coral reef fish. The pelagics, the sharks, and others go quite a distance, and for that reason, having an expanded area really matters. So in this case, in a world of climate change, having an area like Papanaumokuakea, which is very rich in what we call the biocultural resources, not just biological, but cultural resources, the science is sound, and this is really an investment for the future, and especially for fishermen as well. Most of the scientific community has a consensus that we need to put about 30% of the world's oceans into protection if there is any hope for the future. There really is no place left on Earth that's eliminated from exploitation, from the deepest ocean to the most remote area. With technology today, you can get things from anywhere, any depth, any area. So the only protected areas are those we choose to not only establish but to enforce. And by doing so, we're really setting up an opportunity for fishermen to have a future, that if we don't set aside areas, right now we're at 2% when most of the world scientists are looking for 30%. And this is a huge step forward, but it's still pretty small when you consider the ocean needs.
Well, when I'm looking, I see, you know, I want to say aloha to Japan. There's a number of people listening in from Japan, like more than normal. I want to also acknowledge Washington, D.C. and Maryland. We have all the islands listening. So we have Seattle. We have a lot of people that have tuned in, I can tell, just for this show. So saying hi to them. In terms of longline fishing, I don't know much about it. I didn't realize there were millions of hooks on there. So one would presume that the bycatch, is that what it's called, when you get things other than what you're intending to get, is pretty significant. I did talk to some longliners when I was on at the Democrat Hawaii Convention, Hawaii Democratic Convention, that were there, and they were saying they didn't know how all these hotels and restaurants and grocery stores would ever be supplied with fish. You know, it kind of comes back to the average person who has to think about how much do they really want to eat. This was a comment that was made there. I'm not getting behind longlining or mm-hmm. anything. I think I got some of them on the radio, too. So, I mean, listening in on Oahu. They said if there was no longliners and only local fishermen, that there would be such a demand in the hotels from the local fishermen that only the rich would be eating fish. So that's something that I have heard before. That's a comment that has come in. And then also another very big comment, persistent comment, we have talked about it together, but I'm going to do it on the air, is the Navy got a permit for 12 million takes. That's an awful lot of animals to die from their activities in the next 5 years, presumably in the same area. So sometimes people go, well, you know what, how can we let 12 million takes happen and then we are not going to let food happen? So when you're saying having a marine reserve is really good for the animals, what if that actually allows for more marine activity, naval activity? Does anybody have a thought on that one?
I can speak to that one, Hoku.
Okay. This is Ke Aloha. Yeah.
I just wanted to say one of the benefits of creating these protected areas is that you do actually have something to push back on. For example, I was a witness in a Navy sonar case along with Conservation Council and Marjorie Ziegler, and we managed to be able to get the court to even say things like, Navy, yeah, your job is to protect the country, but at the same time, your job is also to protect all the marine mammals as well. And so we actually managed to get some protection around the islands and to protect some of our very special species that are only here in Hawaii. And so what I would want to say to people who have those concerns is that right now there's no protection out there, and if we create a protected area, we actually have reasons to be able to argue to the Navy that they have a higher duty to all of us, because this protected area is to protect not only Hawaii but the world, and it gives us a better arguing position, I think. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you for that insight. And I'm getting all these different things are coming into me on my phone. Go ahead.
If I could just speak to kind of rounding out that statement, kind of going back to the biological resources and the cultural resources are not just exclusively animals that are separate from us. This is an area where we fought to have a management structure that acknowledged biological resources and cultural resources to be the same thing. So when we look at ecosystems, we're talking about knowledge systems and our relationship to place. And we're quite simply saying that longline fishing is not aligned with our traditional value system. And then, you know, to feed the tourists before feeding locals, the very fish that come out of our very oceans is also still not aligned with the place-based practices and belief systems that we know to be from Hawaii. Furthermore, a lot of the, you know, just a little factoid is, you know, longline fisheries, about less than 50% of the fish caught on those longline vessels actually are exported. So who are they really feeding when they talk about feeding tourists or feeding people? According to their own data, it's not, most of it's not Hawaii residents.
Right. And then another piece that's come in, I don't know if this would be Paka. What about the people who aren't American that are fishing from Indonesia or wherever else? I have the stuff about people from Japan or the Philippines coming and fishing in that area. How do we know that those people wouldn't just be getting a clear pass to come in there?
This is Paka. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to speak first on the claim that without longliners, we won't be able to supply the fish to the local restaurants and hotels and whatever. Now, imagine Hawaii surrounded by 50 million hooks throughout the year and how few fish can get through those hooks to reach the local small boat fishermen. If we eliminate the longline fishery, I believe that small boat fishermen can more than provide sufficient amount of fish for local consumption, although we may not be able to provide enough for the export demand. I'm definitely sure we can provide sufficient amount of fish for the local demand. And you spoke about the foreign, I guess, foreign vessels fishing in Hawaii waters.
Yes.
And right now the Coast Guard is responsible for enforcing the EEZ regulation, which prohibits foreign boats from fishing in Hawaii EEZ. And they have satellite technology and other remote sensing technology that they can apply to ensure that these foreign boats are not coming into Hawaii waters. And talking about foreigners, that makes me want to talk a little bit more about the longline fisheries and who the owners of the longline boats are and who makes up the majority of their crew. So the owners of the longline vessels are owned. It's a pretty even distribution among three groups of people, and one group is considered, they call the National Marine Fisheries Service, as Vietnamese Americans. The other third is Korean Americans, and the last third is Euro Americans. So, and the majority of crew fishing on all of the longline boats are imported labor from the Philippines. I think they.
Can you text him to call back?
Okay.
We accidentally dropped him. Our phone lines, I've been having people sharing that they can't get in on our second line, so we need to have him call right back. Sorry, I was trying to open up the second line, and I blew it. Oh, my gosh. But right now I can say you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea. I can see we're at the top of the hour. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. You can tell it is truly community radio because we're only in here 2 hours a week and we don't know how to use our equipment very well. So this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai E-Waste and the Copper Man.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Attention recyclers, beginning June 1st, Kauai residents and businesses can recycle their electronic waste free of charge 6 days a week. E-waste will be accepted at the Puhi Metals Recycling Center Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Puhi Metals is located at 3951 Puhi Road, about a mile from the intersection of Kaumualii Highway. Acceptable e-waste includes computers and accessories, televisions, printers, office equipment, audio and video equipment, and handheld devices. All brands of e-waste will be accepted free of charge with no quantity limits. Services are provided by Resource Recovery Solutions, and e-waste is shipped for recycling to IMS Electronics Recycling in Washington. For more information, call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841, 241-4841, or visit our website at kauai.gov/e-waste, kauai.gov/e-waste. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle your e-waste.
And mahalo for calling Kauai. Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
Hold on, yeah.
Yes. Do I have my original callers back?
I'm trying to get Isaac back. I'll be back in just a second.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'll pull back up in just a moment. Presley, let me. I want to hear your mana'o.
Well, I think what Uncle was saying about, Isaac was saying about the ownership, it was divided into three. There are a lot of foreign owners, so that, I think that's what he's going to call back on. And for me, in 2011, I had an opportunity to go and visit Nihoa with some of my ohana from Haena, Kamela Forest, Laila Chandler, my cousin Keala Kai, and Kili'i Alapai. Julie was wonderful experience to see the waters of Nihoa, and that's why I'm here. The place, I would never do anything to harm the small boat fishermen. I would never take a chance on jeopardizing all my relationships and that I've made over the years on the both with all the fishermen, especially on the west side. I would never do anything to jeopardize their livelihood. I would not do anything that would jeopardize the Hawaiian nation also, and I would never do anything to that wouldn't involve having our Hawaiian presence there. So all these issues, I feel that are being covered by the expansion. What does bother me is the special interest that is dividing our island, to me, that's what hurts the most.
Can you? Who's the special interest?
I'm thinking. Well, the commercial, the heavy commercial,
the heavy line. Commercial.
Yes, if you want me to say it, Westpac, I'll say Westpac.
Okay, but, all right. But, I mean,
I think it's kind of they're kind of dividing. They're making a distinction between the small boat fishermen and the longliners. So.
Okay, and Kalamai, for my not being sharp enough on this whole topic, I've been getting all kinds of texts, and so somebody's calling out Pew as a special interest also. So can you speak to Pew? I don't actually know that much. Pew is a foundation, right? Okay, so, and I think I have... Kei Aloha, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and did we...
I'm hoping that Tammy and Isaac are on, too. I'm sorry we got cut off.
Tammy and Isaac? Okay.
I'm still here.
Okay, I am so sorry. That was my mistake trying to open up the second line because people were trying to call in. So there's been a comment about Pew. That was something that I've been texted. And, Isaac, you were also really having a very important thing that you were speaking when you got cut off.
Isaac, can you finish? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure where we got cut off, but yeah, I mentioned about imagine the island being surrounded by 50 million hooks and how much fish can get through. And I'm sure there are small boat fishermen, which I am one of, can supply enough fish if we can get that 50 million hooks out of from our island. Anyway, I also wanted to continue on. You mentioned about foreign fishing, and that made me recall the longline fishing boat again, who the owners are and who their crew is. So National Marine Fisheries Service records indicate that the ownership of longline boats is fairly evenly divided amongst three groups. One group, they identify as Vietnamese-American. The other group is identified as Korean-American. And the third group is identified as Euro-American. And it also reveals that approximately 75% of the crew on these long-line boats are imported labor from the Philippines. And, you know, a short while back, I read something by Katie Simon, the executive director of Westpac, regarding long-line boats, and she stated that their family operated businesses. And if you look at the ownership of the boat and who the crew members are, the majority of the crew members, you can see that these are not really family-operated businesses. I just want to put that misconception to rest. And just in case I get cut off again, I want to encourage the people on Hawaii to try and organize community meetings. I would like to fly over next week, Monday and Tuesday, and participate in as many community meetings as possible so that we can have face-to-face where we can actually get the truth out on the table and erase a lot of this propaganda that's been floating around.
I think that would be really great. And then, again, Kalamai for not being good with fish, but this is some of the things that I'm getting on through my phone here. They're saying there are different species of tuna. Long line catches big eye, small boat catches yellowfin. That was, and it says big eye is deep set, very hard to catch by small boat without fads. I don't even know what fads is. In deep water, 50 plus miles out, small boats don't catch big eye. Big eye is superior, more fat, deep cold water. That's a fisherman speaking.
Sorry, I can't really hear you that well, but I heard something about small boat kind of catching big eye. And you know, we at the furthest end of the island chain on the big eye here, and we catch big eye here. I don't know where that baloney is coming from.
Well, that's coming from Kauai, and we have a much bigger shelf. You all don't have much of a shelf. You know, it just goes straight down, I think, is what happens with that.
Yeah. But we catch yellowfin, we catch albacore, we catch big eye. Basically, all of the tuna species can be caught throughout the Hawaiian chain by small boat guys. And we don't require fads.
What is a fad?
You fish in those areas. So the fad artificially detour the fish away from traditional koa, which is something I'm actually opposed to.
Okay. As a non-fisherman, I don't understand that one. A fad artificially... Do any of you guys in here know what that is?
Fish aggregating device.
Yeah. Oh, fish aggregating device.
Isaac, you know, can you tell her what a fad is?
Fad is the state of Hawaii's Department of Aquatic Resources has been deploying these buoys out in deep water, hoping to attract fish around those areas.
I see.
And those buoys, fish aggregating devices, okay, they're called.
That's okay.
Where fad comes from, FAD, fish aggregating device. They cause the fish to hang out there rather than going to the traditional koa that has been known by generations of fishermen in Hawaii. And we prefer to fish in our local koa, which is usually closer to shore than these fish aggregating devices are deployed. And the state is actually causing us to venture out further and involve additional fuel costs and safety issues for the smaller boats than what we normally would encounter.
And I'm appreciating that so many of the fishermen that are concerned about this are listening in, so I am sharing what they are saying. This is a little bit of business end of things, but it says yellowfin ahi. Oops, somebody else jumping in. Yellowfin ahi is softer, so it's hard to make poke bowls with that. Big eye tuna is easier, holds better when cut. So that was another piece. So people are basically saying why there's a certain market for the fish that they're getting out in that deeper water.
I think we're getting a little distracted from the idea that we are here to say that this is a community-led, Hawaiian-based proposal founded in traditional values and supported by science as an investment in our future and as a way to what we believe to really have these resources be for the Hawaii people. You know, to talk about poke bowls that, you know, come, most of them actually are imported with chemicals on them anyway. Mm-hmm. We're sidelining the issue that this is a very important place to supply the rest of the main Hawaiian islands. And, you know, if there are special interest groups that are aligned with conservation, you know, us Hawaiians, we have a very ancient mandate to protect and conserve and protect our natural resources. We so believe in conservation because of that. And we believe that we need to protect them from desecration and to utilize them in a manner that is very intimately involved with our livelihood and the quality of our life. And this is where that proposal comes from. And we're getting a little distracted by talking about special interests, yeah, large industrialized systems that we're quite simply saying is not lined up to what is sustainable and a conducive environmental kinship for Hawaii.
Yeah, I think there was a question about Pew. Right?
Pew, yes, somebody asked about Pew.
So Pew is a... Pew also is a...
it's a foundation, right?
They're definitely, you know, they helped protect Papahanaumokuakea the first time. And their goal is marine conservation, and they work with communities across the Pacific. You know, like I had said, going back to our ancient mandate, we believe in conservation. We do to a point that it continues to benefit the people that need to use those resources. You know, we value that partnership, and you know, they've made it clear that they want to stand with us on our Hawaiian values to protect the ocean. And, you know, and if that's a special interest, you know, that's something we're willing to align with as well. And in exchange to protect our resources from degradation and exploitation.
Yeah. And Hoku, can I say one thing here?
Yep.
You know, I understand, people looking at large, you know, nonprofit or big organizations, but you know, here we have a situation where they actually are trying to take the lead from the Hawaiian community. So, you know, I think we're all in alignment on that. And I don't really consider that special interest. I consider that kind of smart, because they're one of the few that we've had problems before where people don't actually take the lead from the community itself. So
I have a few questions with the cultural aspect of it. Something I found pretty clear in the presentation that you were making is that this is an area that really was never meant to have many people there. Is that correct? That it's like...
Yeah, so my presentation was kind of driving home the fact that there's a fallacy going around that Hawaiians had no knowledge of that these islands existed northwest of Niihau, when that's not true at all.
No.
It's completely informed our cultural knowledge systems in the way of our songs, our mo'olelos, our instincts, our understanding of aloha aina and environmental kinship, and how fragile our ecosystems are to large-scale impacts. And as someone who had spent a large amount of time out there, you know, in islands north of Moku Mauna Mana, there's no archaeological sites north of Moku Mauna Mana. There's only Western impact once they, you know, from the middle 1800s on, you'll see buildings and Coast Guard, remnants of Coast Guard occupations and whatnot. And all of this is just to show that they didn't value that place in the same way. We were very, you know, traditionally mindful of how we carried ourselves up there and acknowledging that we didn't belong there in the first place. I mean, when you're up there, you don't even have water available to catch, or there's no soil to grow. It's all sand. And so it's quite literally biologically saying you need to bring your own stuff up there, your own water, your own supplies. And physiologically, that just tells me that I can't survive out there that long. So, and how that informs our cultural knowledge systems is, you know, in the Kumulipo, it's the creation chant, but all of those creatures and that ecosystem northwest of Niihau is superior to us in the Hawaiian perspective of hierarchy. And so that's what my presentation was about, was showing that we absolutely knew that this place existed. We also went even further and was cognizant of our impact in that we left none.
Yes.
Yeah, and from the Kumulipo perspective, it's Vawakua. Those are the realms that belong to Akua, that's why. So, you know, when you go there, you have to go there with specific purpose, too, for sure, I would add. Yeah, hoku. Mm.
So I'm really interested in what Isaac was saying, that they are thinking of coming over here next week, and so I would really encourage that. One thing that I can tell very much, I mean, it's a very, very rare show when my phone does not stop moving on me. I'm getting so many comments, and I don't mean any disrespect by paying attention to those comments. I'm just trying to make sure that I'm holding my listeners, and I'm holding the people, the fishermen. It seems like we have two different groups of fishermen that are listening. Some are smaller scale fishermen than others. I know that there is another, so we got to make sure the button's pushed. That's double, that they won't get lost. Okay. There's another caller coming on the air. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello?
Lisa.
Yes, you're on with, with everybody.
What is that?
There are three other people on the phone with you, so you'll need to be brief with what your thoughts are. This is Clayton.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I can understand what that Wahine was saying about, you know, you got to bring your own stuff. You know, because in actuality, I was at Nihua. And I don't see that anybody could live there one whole year without water. That is, you know, I was there for 21 days, and it seems like to me that it's kind of impossible. If you can go over there and go sail over there, and you can go on that island, and you can think you can get water, no. Not what I saw. Okay, that's my own opinion. But in a sense where I do say this again, okay, and I say this to you, Presley, and I say this to whoever is listening. We need meetings on Kauai. Because this island is the closest to this so-called expansion. And I never did say I'm opposed. You guys know I've been talking with you guys. Okay. And I'm not scared to announce it. And if anybody have a problem with that, 808-652-2425. Give me one call. And you know, the way I gotta look at it is this. You're gonna continue to keep opposing. And if it does happen, then we ain't gonna get a place to play on the table. The table is gonna be shot. And that I know can see. Because fishermen, we do fish. We catch fish. And that's what it is. So, whatever you guys like believe, it's up to you guys. It's you guys' opinion. Mahalo nui, Felicia.
Okay, mahalo. Thank you for calling.
Aloha.
Aloha. So, Isaac, maybe you can come over. On Thursday, I'm going to be on the air again. I'm sitting in for Jonathan Jay this Thursday, 4 to 6 o'clock. We're going to have a number of different topics. But if there is a plan that we can announce when that plan is of when for coming over. And
yeah, we have a few details to work out in terms of organizing that, and we'll be sure to let people know once that happens. But we are planning to talk aloha healo with people such as Clayton as well. So just stay tuned.
Okay. And I saw you writing Fast and Furiously. Presley, did you have an idea?
Well, just to clarify, some of the history of Nihoa, it actually had 200 to 300 people living on it at one time. And there is a source of water. It's on what's known as the East Lo'ulu Valley. There's a cave where the Hawaiians our ancestors had a calabash where it would drip from the wall, so that was their drinking source. They've left 200. There's 70 something house sites.
Yeah, I've always heard that there's a lot over there. That Necker, what's the real name for Necker?
Mokumanamana. Just to be clear, I was talking about islands northwest of those islands that Uncle just referred to, because what happens geologically is the islands go from being straight up cliff sides to completely flat atolls once that next atoll is present, you know, in the lineup. And so Uncle is correct. There is water up until that point, but there is a change in geological composition that that doesn't afford us as much survivability as, say, on Niho and Mokumanamana. And that's a distinct point to make in terms of our spirituality in Hawaii and our beliefs and practice systems as it lined up to those islands. There was something very unique that happened. It went from a realm that we could survive called the Ao, which is the light, to the pole, which is the darkness, which is what Kealoha was referring to. And so these are not just free-flying ideas. They're deeply rooted in ground truth into the environmental observations around us and informed by understanding how those islands exist.
Yes, well, thank you. And, I trade plants, I get plants, and I don't know 100% for sure, but I've been given one kind of banana that I'm told came from Nihoa and some sweet potatoes came from Nihoa. So there are certain even strains of plants that are kind of special to that place. They don't need as much water. So, okay, well, we are getting close to the 5:30 time. I want to allow everybody to be able to share. I will share one last comment from my concerned fisher friends, and that they're just worried that it's again just comes down to the federal government. I don't think anybody wants to push back on the Hawaiian cultural aspects, and but worried about mission creep. You know, that's I think what people worry about, mission creep from the federal government. That it's a mask for something else. You know, I don't get a sense that people don't respect, you know, the motivation, the cultural motivation. So I think that's but maybe you all can give like a closing thought or argument.
I'll start, and then if you guys want to go, we definitely believe that there's a bit of a skewed bias in the management structure, which is why we're also advocating to have Hawaiians at the table, because we do feel it is that important to have that input in the direction of the future of how this place is managed. And so intricately tied to this expansion of 2,200 miles out to the EEZ is also the elevation of a Hawaiian voice at the table, which would be OHA as a co-trustee, which would be the highest seat within that management structure. And so we think it is definitely that important. And in an effort to acknowledge those injustices, and this is kind of a way of damage control. And then my final thought is out to the community, the Kauai community, is that we are definitely advocating for public comment meetings on Kauai, meetings on Kauai from government officials as well. We're hearing, you know, this will likely happen, but, you know, specifically to people like Clayton Kubo, you know, we definitely think that input is important. And so our intention is not to shy away from that. In fact, it is to hear you guys out. So
is there a contact point? Like, can somebody call somebody? Is there a phone number or an email or something like that? So I'm not the go-between, because I don't feel like
for now we have
rise to that well.
We have a contact page on our website. If you just go to expandpmnm.com, there would be all the contact information you can find us at. And
because maybe somebody can help you put on one of these meetings, because I've gone to a couple of your meetings, and it's been more people who agree with you than don't. So sometimes what's really important is to be able to reach the people who have the opposite side of it. Last night I had too many meetings to go to. I know there was something called Oceans for Peace. That was at 6 o'clock in Lihue Neighborhood Center. I believe that is more the whale people and the fishermen. And I missed that meeting, and I didn't hear, you know, what came out of it. One would think Oceans for Peace would be right behind the idea of this expansion, and I think, you know, they have trust issues with how the ocean can be exploited. But if you're able to partner with the fishermen and Oceans for Peace, and then do something all together. Because when I listen, most people are actually in agreement. They don't want to, like, shut down cultural issues, and they don't want to be shutting down most. I mean, most of these people who are affected, they don't fish in that area. And there's a difference between the 50 and the 200 miles. It's a little bit outside of my pay grade to really negotiate this. But this is my fourth show that I've done on this topic.
Well, we definitely appreciate the suggestions. And moving forward, we are adamantly trying to continue this conversation. And so, you know, engage. You know, we can be contacted via Facebook and our website for now. And within those two spaces, you can find more contact information for us.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'm going around the room getting everybody's last thoughts.
Yes, thanks again, Felicia. I just wanted to reiterate my feelings that I would never do anything to, you know, harm. I really want to support our local fishermen and support our local farmers. And that's why I feel this strong to take on this. I feel it's a kuleana, especially for protecting Niue.
And Dr. Bob Richmond from University of Hawaii, yes. Scientist, token scientist.
Pet scientist, there we go. I just want to say that this is such a great opportunity.
Hang on, I don't know if I got you.
It's a real pleasure to be part of the...
Are you in the mic?
I should be right up against it. Can you hear me? I'm still connected.
Try again.
Does that work now?
That's better.
Okay.
It was me.
I had been cut off. It's a real privilege to be in a position of support for what's clearly an incredible initiative that I look at these data every day. I'm looking at the fisheries numbers. I'm looking at what's happening to coral reefs. You can't help but look at these numbers and not be concerned about the future. And I say that not just as a scientist, but I say that as a parent. I think this opportunity to be able to set aside an area for replenishment serves the needs of future generations, the present generation, and fishermen as well. Everybody has to benefit from it. It's a bold move that I think supports the people of Hawaii, the people of the Pacific, and the people of the world. And the value of the science is to be in a supporting role to make sure that there's access to the most up-to-date available science and data to make an informed decision. And in this case, the science is very clear in supporting the decision to increase the protection to the full EEZ.
Well, thank you. And ke aloha, Tammy and Isaac.
Go ahead, Isaac.
Okay. Well, I hope some people don't feel offended that my purpose here is to try and use the occupiers' laws to the best of our ability to preserve what we have while we work toward restoring the Hawaiian Kingdom government. If anybody's involved in getting involved in that stuff and you have a Facebook account, I have a group with a little over 1,000 people in a group called Destination Restoration. I hope you find that interesting, come and join us in the discussion. We have already developed a draft process to restore our government according to our legitimate Hawaiian Kingdom Constitution as well as our legitimate laws. We do not need to be creative. The process was basically handed to us on a silver platter, and all we need to do is carry out the plan that was left to us by our kupuna. Mahalo.
Mahalo. And ke aloha.
Yes, I would just like to say, you know, it's been an honor to participate here with you folks. And I just want to say talking is the first part of healing and coming together as a community and sharing our ideas and our ideas for success, you know. And because really we just need to hold the position that aloha aina is, true aloha aina is mako tu makai. And we just have to give each other a little bit of space to share, and I think there's more agreement than there is difference. So I thank you for this opportunity, and I thank Hoku and Uncle Presley guys for inviting us to participate here as well. Mahalo.
Mahalo. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. So we are going to hear the county council report, and so I'm going to let you guys go. Phone friends, Tammy. So mahalo for calling in, and I look forward to seeing you. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. Aloha. And this is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. I'm going to play the county council report so we can just take a little breath. And that is not on here. Okay, so we will we'll be hearing from Amy Goodman for just a moment.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. So, we have been looking at what is going on with the Democratic primaries, and there is a lot going on with that. So, let's see if they have gotten California out there. They are reporting now, those polls are closed. So, okay, there you see what I feel like. With 6% reporting, Hillary Clinton is at 63%. With Montana reporting, Hillary Clinton is at 48.5%, and Bernie Sanders is at 46%. New Jersey now has 99% reporting. So this was a big win for Hillary Clinton, 63%, Bernie Sanders, 36%. New Mexico, Hillary Clinton, 52%, Bernie Sanders, 48%. That was with 84% reporting. South Dakota, Hillary Clinton, 93% reporting, 51.4%. So, did I get everything? California, 7%. So far, Hillary Clinton is at 62%. Bernie Sanders at 36%. So, the only one that Bernie has won so far is North Dakota at 18%. Marshall?
Yeah, Felicia, we just had a request to repeat the website. That was stated earlier. It's expandpmnm.com. Expand Papa Mama.
Hanau Mokuakea. Marine. What's the N for? National Monument. Marine National Monument.
Right, but it isn't spelled out. It's expandpmnm.com. And the Facebook page is expandpmnm.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, you want to know another kind of unexpected piece of news? Today is the last day for putting in your paper, so no small surprise. Felicia Cowden did not put in her bid to run for county council, but Kanoi Ahuna, she just officially filed papers to run against Ron Cochi. So Ron Cochi is the sitting senator, president of the Senate for Hawaii, and Kanoi Ahuna, she is on, Dan Ahuna is on Office of Hawaiian Affairs. I'm looking at Presley because you probably know. Kanoi, I think, is on the Planning Commission. Really, really bright, wonderful person. And, you know, our prayers go out to their family because their darling son, nicknamed Rocket, he's a freshman. He has gone through some brain surgery in San Francisco. He had, I think, 4 surgeries, if I'm correct. But he's doing well, so they've kind of had, it was in the bone, in the brain. So that means real commitment for her if she is stepping up in the face of probably I don't know what could be higher for a mother than a struggle with the son. Do you all know her?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a good person. So that's happening. So all right. And both of them are very welcome to come in and share what they think, you know, on what their campaign is about. So that's a big one. And Kanoi lives where? In Wailua?
I'm not sure where they're living right now.
Yeah. Okay. So they are very much both involved in Hawaiian cultural affairs.
So, Felicia, California.
Yes.
Clinton.
I you know what? I'm seeing that. Is that, don't smile at me. Oh, my gosh. What a terrible thing. Okay. So, let's see. California. Oh, only 4% are posting. So, but it is 4% is reporting Hillary Clinton 63% to 35%. I would say that is a sad day for America.
You know, basically, Hillary Clinton has run the board today, except for North Dakota, which was a caucus and has 18 delegates. So she really has done what Bernie Sanders was hoping that she wouldn't do, and cement the numbers and the image of her being the presumptive Democratic nominee for president.
Well, we will see. It's not all done. We really, Montana has 5% reporting, and so to claim it on Montana, it's 48.4 to 46.8. California is 63.4 to 35.4, and that is 4% reporting. So there can be, hopefully, because California has a lot. We have a caller.
Hey, thanks so much for giving us these updates. When you say 4% reporting, what does that mean?
That means that when they, you know, they have to go through and count the precincts. The polls haven't closed very long ago. The polls have been closed for about 35 minutes, and so it takes a while to count them and then report them and turn them in. So,
So that's only 4% of the votes so far, what the percentages are?
That's 4%, and I don't know where that percent is, but that is a significant lead for that small sampling. So, I mean, if that's Orange County, it's unsurprising. If that's Sonoma County, it's very surprising, you know? So it depends where that's coming from, and I'm not from California. Did I fake it well?
You did good. So I'm not either, but thanks so much for keeping us updated, and I will just say for sure, like, from what I've seen of how many people have been turning out for Bernie's, you know, talks in California.
Just a landslide.
Like you say, yeah, landslide. But either we have something suspicious going on with the counting, or we're just early in the counting. So let's just keep watching.
Well,
thank you, Felicia.
And Marshall?
This may be it. We had a caller who just pointed out that these early results are all of the absentee ballots. And they reflected
in California.
In California, right. And so, yeah, right. It had been saying 7%. Now it's saying 4%. So they reflect a different demographic than the electorate as a whole. So we need to see these numbers change.
Well, those might change. And so it's kind of a very big issue because, you know, I'll tell you, I'm just going to own it. I don't like all this war, you know. And I've lived my whole life with ethnic guilt. And it's so funny because I grew up where I was dark. I faded when I moved here. I was too dark to be where I was at, and then I got light when I'm here. But no matter where, you know, always somebody has been really, really hurt. And when we look at all this just relentless war in Libya and Syria and Iraq, and these countries who've done nothing to us, and we have just decimated them, just beat them down to the Stone Age, I'm so saddened to think that we will continue with doing that, and we have created these insurgent groups that are hurting all kinds of people, and Europe's a mess from all these people who've been displaced. Millions of people have been displaced. You know, more have been displaced than died, but a couple million few people have died, and we have contaminated the land, and it's not good. And I don't understand a vote that would continue that, honestly. Are you still on the line? She might not be. Okay, but anyway, That's what I think. So it's a pretty big deal. Do we have a caller wanting to go on the air?
No, we don't.
Okay. Just somebody wanting to talk while we're busy here. So we are looking at what has happened. And so those were absentee votes.
That's right, and I'm sorry, I just got into a conversation. There's somebody passing on a unreferenced idea that I really didn't want to repeat.
Okay. All right. Well, I can, you know, we've had so much reactions and calls that what I can tell is people care very deeply about all of this stuff. And, you know, in some ways, what's happening with Papahanaumokuakea is a little microcosm of this. You know, we see a displaced people, and how do people reclaim what's been displaced? And when it's also got the competition for military access, and I believe that RIMPAC has begun. Do you guys know? I think RIMPAC is underway. That's the war games of the Rim of the Pacific. 27 nations are out there and testing their war equipment. So, you know, everybody's really silent in here, but I have trouble with it. I have trouble with it. It feels a little bit to me almost like I used to go to trade shows all the time. It's almost like a trade show of equipment.
Right.
And there could be some value in doing it. I mean, I'm sure there's some value in doing it, but it seems expensive and it seems hard on the environment.
Right. So, back to the election, honestly, I missed the last thing you're saying because I was on the phone with someone. But Bernie has said that he's going to take a time to reflect on what's going on tomorrow. He's going to go home and think about it. And we'll see where he goes from there, you know.
Well, I hope he has a contested thing in Philadelphia. I hope that the convention is contested, because I think that what he did say, when there is so many people who are motivated and so many people are registering, but I believe the number they've been throwing around, it's hard to really know what is real, but it's around 40%. Sometimes they say 42% of people are not affiliated with a party. So those people don't really get the opportunity to vote. And the majority of them are supportive of Bernie Sanders.
Do you think that there is a possibility that enough superdelegates will switch their vote from Hillary Clinton to Bernie Sanders to make him the nominee?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think if he had a better day today, I want to really look at what has happened. We'll see at the end of the California event.
Right.
Hi, we've got my favorite Hillary Clinton supporter in here. He usually has to walk in. This is Jazz with John. He's coming up next at a quarter till. I mean, it's a quarter till right now. At 6 o'clock, Jazz with John comes on. And so he's a Hillary person. I'm a Bernie person. Yesterday I had a lunch with a Hillary person and a Trump person, and it worked out fine. We were all just talking about things on Kauai. And the other thing that's interesting is, like, local politics is so different than national politics. You know, we're basically just trying to see how can we malama aina the most, you know. Everybody's got a little bit different way of doing it. But I'm really glad that it is something that matters to everybody. But at the national level, I don't know. It's not what it seems like to me. It seems like, do we want to help the people or do we want to help the companies? You know?
Right. Well, we'll see. I mean, another big thing going on is it looks like President Obama is about to endorse, you know, most likely Hillary.
He has from the very beginning, don't you think?
Well, he hasn't endorsed anyone. No.
Okay.
He's been holding out. He's been trying to give him some room, but he talked to Bernie on the phone, I believe it was yesterday, and it's looking like that's what he's going to do. They say that he's really itching to get into the campaign. I can see him having some fun pillorying Donald Trump. He's lot of fun to make fun of at this point.
Well, yep. So I see that. So we can take a call at 826-7771, and it can be on either this or on the water or anything else. Hey, you know what I think I forgot to mention? Is today at 6 o'clock, there is a very good bee event. Do you have the details on that, Marshall? There's like 2 days of bee training.
I can pull it up.
Okay.
1 moment, please.
We're getting that. And next week, I will be going to, I'm going to go over to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and watch that there's two lawsuits on Maui and one on Hawaii and one for Kauai. And these are all efforts at, you know, self-determination of the islands about their agricultural lands.
So tonight, it actually started at 5:30, mm-hmm. goes till 8:30. It's a meeting of KB. That's the Kauai
Beekeepers Association.
And they're going to present a short Pests on the Horizon PowerPoint discussing how to monitor for varroa mites, discuss a plan of action for Kauai if varroa or another undesirable invasive bee species or pest were detected. Tomorrow, from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., there will be a more in-depth varroa mite training. And from 12:30 to 3:30 p.m., there will be a class on products of the hive. They'll elaborate on products made from raw resources in a beehive, wax, propolis, honey. They'll include a hands-on portion and a small product to take home. And there is a small fee for that.
And you're going to go tomorrow, right?
I'm going to go to that, yeah.
You're a bee guy.
Yeah.
We have a lot of bee people here at KKCR, a lot of bee. I've got great jars of honey in my kitchen because of all my fellow programmers who are bee guys.
And, you know, if we have a minute, I want to mention, too, that there are some upcoming CERT trainings.
Community Emergency Response Team.
Community Emergency Response Team. And there, you know what? I'm sorry, my computer's spinning. I can't give that to you.
Got the spinning wheel of death.
I know the Hanalei one starts not this Thursday, but next Thursday. Here we go. Hanalei, we've got Thursdays starting June 16th and going till June 21st from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. In Kapa'a, we've got Tuesdays from June 21st to the 26th, also 5:30 to 9:30. And in Lihue at the fire headquarters, Mondays beginning July 11th and going till August 15th, 5:30 to 9:30. So you can go to kauai.gov/CERT, C-E-R-T, call 808-645-0661 or email kfdcert@kauai.gov.
We've been following a lot of the emergency management efforts and doing things. There was an event last weekend for Halelea, their coordinated effort. So we applaud all these people who are working on that and doing the dog teams. And all. Have you done any of that, Presley?
Well, we were part of the North Shore Resilience Emergency and Resilience Plan. With Makala.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's really important that we realize it's an important issue because of the amount of people that we have in meeting visitors, yeah. And it's really good to have a plan in effect, yeah, in case anything happens, you know. Like
to me, you know what I would think they would do more of that they don't is have little signs with an arrow to go uphill, like where is the best place to head uphill, because that's the problem, is that you don't want to get stuck in traffic trying to go from one direction. Almost any place has an uphill point, and I think that that's something that would be really good to see is road signs that just have a direction to go when there's an emergency. When I used to live in Hanalei, I never realized I was a little bit nervous about that. I wasn't nervous about it till I stopped being nervous about it. I mean, you don't even know. It's kind of, oh, wow. Because when we would have these drills, essentially, when we'd think we're having a tidal wave or a big flood, you know, you see people with their horse and their kayaks and, you know, everything, just the wagon trains are leaving Hanalei to get across the bridge to go up high, and everybody's sort of pulling all their stuff with them. And I used to keep my insurance policies and, you know, everything I needed, and I was ready to go. I kept things all bagged, and just as a natural course, I didn't even think about it to do that. But now when I get those civil defense calls, I roll over and go back to sleep. And so that is quite a difference. On Oahu, we have Dr. Robin here. On Oahu, you guys seem to be oblivious because you've never really gotten spanked. I'll be over there and there's, you know, this, everything's going off and people just don't even bother. And I think, oh my goodness, if that island got hit with all those elevators and sewage systems up the tall buildings, I don't know how they'd manage.
Yeah, people in Oahu don't know how to manage at all.
No.
Yeah. I lived on...
There you go.
I lived on Guam for 18 years, and we knew how to handle typhoons, earthquakes, you know, you name it. It really scares me when we move back to Hawaii if Oahu's hit with an emergency, it's going to be big, big trouble.
It's going to be big, big trouble. I think most of us who've lived here for very long live prepared. I feel like I live prepared. Do you, must, Presley? Yeah?
Yeah, I think that's one of the main reasons why I felt it was really important about taking care of our resources. You know, I remember, especially going through hurricanes, it really makes you aware of how important our resources are, and taking care of our resources so that we're not relying on importing food, and how important it is to, you know how to be a good farmer, a good fisherman, a good hunter.
And it's easier than one thinks. I mean, I don't know about the hunting and the fishing, but I eat, the majority of my food comes right out of my little yard, and I enjoy it, and I feel really good about it when I'm eating it. And it's my grocery store is my little yard, and I know that that used to be normal. That was the normal way, how everybody had their, not everybody, but most people had their houses. I've only lived here 32 years, and when I got here, that was something I really noticed, was all the abundance growing out of people's yards. And it's sort of funny that my yard looks like my hair. It's just kind of wild and messy with, you know, food just spilling out all over the place. And most people have these little manicured grass yards and a few little flowers around the edge, and I think, bad choice, you know. Because definitely if we had food in our yards, that we would be ready to feed each other. And I think with the small boat fishermen, we definitely have that opportunity, right? That we want to keep the small fishermen, like when we are talking about what this is, it's supporting the small fishermen, and I think that they could be feeding us as well. So I am just looking one more time at the presidential piece here, see how it is going in California. Still, they're having a little bit of difficulty counting it up, so we only have 5% reporting, so it is not much. It is still Hillary with that 5% doing well. Montana's up to 13%, and Hillary is up by a couple of percentage points over Bill. So that will be... what we've got going on there. So we're just about to go. Jazz with John is going to be on, and I just one more round of being able to say aloha and ciao if you would like.
Yeah, once again, we'd really just like to thank everybody for listening, and also thank you to you, Felicia, for giving us the opportunity to share our side and where this proposal comes from, and what we're really really, really trying to go to bat for, you know, a better quality of life for Hawaii residents, you know, across the scale, across the board. So thank you for giving us the chance to say that.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be working with you.
Thank you, Felicia.
Okay, and...
Thanks so much. It was a great opportunity, and we really appreciate it.
And do you have any cohort things over here with KCC? Is there any way that people who are interested in learning through UH on the subject matter that you work with, do they have to attend over on Oahu? Do some of the fields of study, they actually work over here somewhat through KCC, or they have different programs?
Yeah, we actually do some things with KCC, and also wanted to mention too that we have the International CoreReef Symposium coming on Oahu the 19th through the 24th of June this month, and there's going to be a special session on Papanaumokuakea
that
Friday afternoon.
International Coral Reef Symposium.
We have 2,300 scientists that deal with coral reef issues from around the world. 97
wow.
nations coming.
That's a big deal.
We actually have quite a few people from the Native Hawaiian community. Mak'ala, one of our long-term colleagues from here, is going to be here as well. And we will have a special session on Papanaumokuakea as well.
So it's June 19th?
19th. It does. The opening starts the evening. The first full day is June 20th, which is a Monday, and it goes through that Friday. And there'll be a lot of sessions, three nights of open to the community, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights. We'll have open sessions for community members. Monday is going to be at the Ala Moana Hotel, Tuesday and Wednesday at the Convention Center. But we're really trying to make this relevant to Hawaii. We're really working with field trips. We actually have some coming to Kauai to be able to showcase some of the work that's being done here on water quality, community-based activities as well. So we're really trying to make sure we get the biggest bang for the buck to reach out to the community of Hawaii as well as the Pacific. We have three presidents coming, the president of Palau, president of the Federated States of Micronesia, president of the Marshall Islands, all to work together on trying to do a better job of bridging science to policy and knowledge to action, which is a very good example of what we're trying to do right here.
Well, I'm kind of shocked that I didn't even know that was happening for as much as we have conversation going on about the reef. So, yay, thank you for sharing that, and I will make a point to go look it up, and I will post on that, because the dissolving of our reefs is a very big deal, and trying to figure out how we can slow that down or stop that is really huge. So, mahalo for coming in, and mahalo, listeners, and Jazz with John will be up next. And right now, we have the County Council report.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a County Council report for the week of June 6th. There will be a public hearing in a council committee meeting on Wednesday, June 8th. The public hearing will be at 8:30 a.m., followed by the committee meeting. Both the hearing and meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here's some highlights in the agenda. The public hearing will cover Bill number 2632 for an ordinance to amend an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising the amounts estimated in the general fund and golf fund. This is the employee's retirement system excess pension costs in the amount of $330,096. This bill is also on the Budget and Finance Committee's agenda in the committee meeting. The Planning Committee has on their agenda Bill 2601, Draft 1, for an ordinance amending the county code relating to additional dwelling units on other than residentially zoned lots, and this was deferred from March 16th. For more information on meetings or meeting archives, please visit the county's website. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.